Roger Williams University is hosting a crisis management seminar on May 3rd at their Providence campus. Crises, whether a natural disaster, cyber attack, or financial instability, can have severe repercussions if not handled properly. This is where crisis management plays a pivotal role. Join Roger Williams MBA students and expert speakers to learn how to prepare for the unexpected. The program is totally free and open to the public. You can register online at rwu.edu/events/crisis-management-symposium.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
For up-to-the-moment Rhode Island news, follow at Bill Bartholomew on X. Bartholomew Town is brought to you in part by the University of Rhode Island Online, who offer a wide array of programs. Learn more at uri.edu/online or give them a call at 401-874-5280. That's 401-874-5280.
At HealthSource RI for Employers, we provide access to health insurance to more than 1,100 local businesses and nonprofits, and 96% of them renew through us every year. Maybe it's our choice of 19 different health plans, our 10 years of customizing solutions, or our one local team of dedicated experts helping employers find quality health insurance. See how our numbers stack up for you. Learn more at healthsourceri.com/employers.
Representative Terry Kortvrind is joining us on a topic that we've been discussing for years here on the podcast and is really, I think, one of the major issues in the state, and that's shoreline access. Rep, good morning and thanks for your time. And also, as I said offline, we were supposed to do this last week and got bumped because of a certain Secretary Pete Buttigieg's arrival in Rhode Island. So I appreciate the accommodation.
No problem. And I'm happy to be with you. Let's talk about one of my favorite things.
It is. And we've talked about this in the past. And look, there's so many different aspects to this. But at the end of the day, it's kind of a basic issue. Rhode Islanders and frankly, anybody ought to have access to our shoreline. It's a natural phenomenon that is, it certainly should not be commercialized or privatized in to the extent that it has been. There were some great victories last year in the area of horizontal access, so to speak. That's basically walking up and down the shoreline, so to speak.
Right.
Now, wow. Lateral. And now one of the major challenges is with access to those points on the shoreline. Some people call it vertical. I'm not sure what you would call it, but
perpendicular.
Thank you. I need to get my terminology in check here, evidently. So give us, I guess, just the sort of from your standpoint as a member of the legislature, an overview on where shoreline access is right now and where it needs to go in the near term.
Well, I think, as you said, we had a huge win getting the lateral access bill approved. Since then, in the study commission, which the speaker refers to frequently, so I will too, many people gave us testimony about that we should extend and look at perpendicular access because that study commission was very specific about lateral access. Lawsuits popped up, which was not really unexpected. And the speaker's feeling at the time, which would have been last session, was that we should let that process play out and kind of stay out of the way of that. So he was not really a fan of having an extended study or another study commission. Actually, it would have been a new one. So over the summer, Senator Gu and I were talking to some of the advocates, and we were given a kind of a list of ideas that we came up with. And so we've selected three of those and put them in as separate bills for consideration this session. And I think one of them, it's kind of a weird terminology, but the anti-footway path bill, that one I believe has been put in before, maybe in 2018. And Chairman McNamara had a similar bill last year. Actually, so he put it in last year. He wasn't going to put it in this year. So I took his bill and he was okay with that. He's a co-sponsor. So
What are the other two pieces?
The other two, one is around the process of road abandonment. Senator Gu and I were really thinking of all the dead ends that end at the water. You know, that in the current process around how municipalities deal with those abandoned roads, if they determine that they don't want to maintain them for whatever reason, there's a process. And the process really either has the municipality having the road and being required to maintain it or abandoning it. And my understanding is that usually it's turned over to the abutters. And takes the municipality out of it. And we were looking for a third way, which I believe they have in Maine and maybe Vermont, and which would allow like to protect an access point if people are using that even as a footpath to the shore. Or there was that article that I think was in the Projo, I hope I get the publication correct, about all the abandoned roads in the interior of the state. And that article, too, really, Senator Gu, I have to give her a lot of credit because she did a lot of the research on this. And I think she was moved by that article. So it would deal with both of those, potentially deal with both those issues on a go-forward basis.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing that shoreline access is controversial. And of course, you referenced the lawsuit, the Coastal Taxpayers Association, this sort of, it quickly became like a cartoon supervillain type of organization. And at the end of the day, yes, private property is, of course, it's something we need to understand and protect. And everyone has a right in the society and the system we've built. That is absolutely something folks are entitled to. What they're not entitled to is blockading public areas of the shoreline and blockading access to those areas. I mean, I've seen all kinds of wild stuff. I always reference it, but someone once set up sawhorses on a road down in Newport. It's a public road. Cones of their, you know, miscellaneous cones that they probably got at Benny's to kind of block parking spots. And that went on for weeks until I actually made a call to Newport City Hall. And I said, hey, these don't seem like municipal signs. And sure enough, within a few minutes, they were removed. But that's just one small example of a mentality that is certainly of a minority standpoint from a very small amount of people, but it impacts the whole region.
Sure. So the third bill just is more around education and educating homeowners. So the third bill is a disclosure that would, a real estate disclosure at the time of a closing. If a homeowner is purchasing a waterfront property, that they would have to sign off on an acknowledgement of the state's statute. And it also requires notification of any right-of-ways that go through the property, or CRMC permits, because there was that issue in Barrington that we read about where the homeowner had a seawall. It was a new homeowner, and they were not aware that there was permitted access on a seawall that CRMC had, I suppose, helped rebuild or something. And I don't know exactly how it got there, but the new homeowner wasn't aware of that and was trying to kick the fishermen off. That would hopefully avoid that situation in the future if we had those types of real estate transaction sign-offs, disclosures. And going back to the footway path, we are the only state in the country, according to Mike Rubin, and he testified in the Judiciary Committee when this bill was heard a couple weeks ago. We're the only state. He had done some research when he worked for the AG's office, and we're one of the only states in the country that doesn't recognize foot traffic as a possibility for granting a public easement, you know, historical use of a footpath. Our statute requires that it be used by a vehicle. And it's problematic for a lot of reasons to have it like that. And it's, we're an anomaly with other states across the country.
What's so important is the sophistication of the bills that are being introduced, because everybody who gets involved in this issue, well, I say everybody, that's quite general, but for the most part, people just say we should have open access to the shoreline and be able to traverse the shoreline and gather seaweed. It kind of starts and stops there. But there are all these tributary issues that surround it. They're either mechanisms that are designed to intentionally thwart access to the shore, or they're even just by happenstance, by virtue of law. So being able to attack the problem with that level of intricacy is so important. You've been so good at that here. What would you say right now is the biggest challenge to getting these bills across the finish line and kind of just continuing to advance the shoreline access cause?
Probably just the sheer number of bills in the legislature in general.
Right.
We haven't really gotten to the point. There is a point in the legislative session where reps get to identify their own priorities. Chairmen identify their priorities with leadership. Reps do the same. And we are approaching that time, but we're not really quite there yet. But soon, around the April break, that usually is the marker for when that part of the session starts to happen. Although there's no shortage of asks right now.
That's right. One thing about this, though, this whole arena is there's really no fiscal note attached to it. And you can make an argument that it's an economic generator. The more access we have, the more our tourism messaging is going to resonate accurately.
Yes. I would think that the disclosure bill should be easy. I don't really know what the impediment to the footway bill was last year when Chairman McNamara put it through. I don't know what leadership is thinking about that yet, but maybe I'll be back to report.
Exactly. Well, the real estate bill is really important as well, because there's a robust industry in Rhode Island of folks who, whether through my favorite Airbnb or short-term rentals, which is a whole other arena, but
yes,
or even just the traditional summer cottages and full homes, frankly, that rent a piece of property for a week and their family comes in from wherever, and they're promised, even in full real estate transactions, sometimes you see this language, private beach access, when they're not entitled to private beach access. That's a real issue that can become contentious very quickly.
You know, you've spurred something, because I'm on the short-term rental study commission, and we didn't put rentals, but you raise an interesting scenario there, and we did not we didn't put anything for rental properties in the disclosure. But you've got me thinking now.
Well, you can almost see the person that comes in. They say, "Well, wait a second, I paid X thousand dollars for a private beach in Matunuck, and I'm entitled to be able to come out here and do whatever I want. I want to set up a volleyball net or whatever it is." And you can do that, but you can't kick people off. That's
right.
The big difference.
That's right. Within that stretch, 10 foot from the most recent high tide line.
Yes.
That's right.
Last area here, just this is something that you've been a champion of from a legislative standpoint for a while. And I think you're one of the first names that come up when people talk about the good work that's going on Smith Hill in this sector. What does it mean to you personally?
I just got interested in it. I'm trying to remember how I got interested in it. I'm in the marine industry. So I have, I grew up in Florida, actually, in Miami. Spent a lot of time on yachts. So it's just an area that I'm comfortable with. And I'm trying to remember how this came to my attention, but it just, was a topic that I could grasp and nobody else really had that lane. You know, a lot of reps have different things that they're working on. And this was just a really good fit with me. And I got very interested in the history behind it. I thought the history was fascinating. And the study commission, I'm grateful that the speaker gave me that opportunity. And it was just something I was able, like in my mind, I could map out how we could get potentially, hopefully, get to a good point. And it worked out well because, you know, there was a path there. You could talk to the historians, you could talk to environmentalists, the fishermen, the, you know, all the different sectors of advocacy that were affected by this. And it's just was an area that I'm comfortable in. I hope that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense.
Not all my constituents love me for this.
Right. Because you're in a district.
That's right. You know, but there's plenty of them, I think, that do appreciate the effort.
I would agree. I grew up in Charlestown, and I was always surprised by some of the stuff that I would see when I'd have my summer jobs on the beach, whatever it was, in the parking lot or things like this, where neighboring properties that were private would just become enraged when somebody literally just walked down the beach to get a little bit of space, even though they were below the then standard, which was the mean high tide marker. And right. It flagged me as a high school student. When I was in college, I had a job working at the Wachill Yacht Club Cabanas. I was the cabana boy. I randomly ended up in this job. And what was really interesting to me was to see that crowd, which, you know, to their good for them, they're a lot of wealthy folks from New York and judges and so on and so forth. Their appetite for shoreline access or their approach to it was a lot different, which was, hey, we have our cabana, we have our private bathroom, we have the section of the beach that's ours, we have our yacht. What do we care if somebody walks down the beach and, you know, goes and swims in front of our cabanas? It was such a different approach. And it is implanted this very judgmental and anecdotal standpoint that I've taken on this issue, which is a lot of the people who end up getting involved in trying to blockade access to the shoreline are people who wish they had a private beach club, but they don't. And so they try to just, we're all in this together. We're all the 99%. And somehow it ends up dividing us along this weird line, which shouldn't be there. We should all just be able to enjoy right. This. It's nature. What are you doing?
The constituencies are interesting because it was for me in the legislature, it was an opportunity for me to work bipartisanly on the study commission with Blake. And I come from a purple district. So I thought that was an interesting opportunity. And I'll have to say, growing up in Miami, went to the beach all the time as a kid. And the first time I think it was actually in New Jersey. I was on a vacation with my dad, and I was a kid, and you had to pay to get on the beach. And I remember
the little tags and all that.
Yes, yep. I remember being struck at how odd that was. It was unbelievable to me back then. So maybe, you know, maybe that's part of why this resonated with me, because I remember that.
Definitely. I was always horrified by Narragansett Town Beach, a place I love. And I could never understand. I could never wrap my head around. I mean, I know why. Obviously, there's a financial element to it, but it always bothered me that they would charge, and they still do charge, to get onto the beach. And then, of course, as kids, we're taking paddling surfboards in from the Coast Guard house or Narrow River to try to save 10 bucks or whatever. And you're thinking, this is just ridiculous. So, Rep, really appreciate your work on this. Thank you so much
for your
time this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure.
All right. Have a good day.
At HealthSource RI for Employers, we provide access to health insurance to more than 1,100 local businesses and nonprofits, and 96% of them renew through us every year. Maybe it's our choice of 19 different health plans, our 10 years of customizing solutions, or our one local team of dedicated experts helping employers find quality health insurance. See how our numbers stack up for you. Learn more at healthsourceri.com/employers.